Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
All right, guys. Today we're going to be talking about power casters, or if that is even a thing, if it exists. I'm David.
I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
All right. So I guess we should start with the first question. Do you think there is such a thing as a power caster?
Yes.
Some people don't. Some people think that, like, oh, there are no power casters. All casters are created equal. I mean,
when with everything, all God's Morgul children. And Gareth are as good as,
Right.
I totally think there's such a thing as power casters. I just think it's a function of math.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough things. I would say there's a list of 5 to 10 that just have won tournaments forever. Like, go back and look at tournament results. It's Haley 2, Gorshade 2, Vale 2. Like,
Gorshade 2?
Oh, sorry. Gatsby. Gorshade 2 is actually very good, but he's not quite the power.
Gorshade 2's math advantage is not like number fixing. It's how many seconds you have to think, and it's 2 or 3.
Gorshade's possessed my mind, so in my own mind, I think he's great. But no,
Freudian slip.
Yeah, not a power caster.
Gorshade 2, 2016.
But yeah, so those three, they just win a lot more.
So there are casters that are statistically more likely to win, maybe because they affect the numbers in the game, but this is a concept. Okay, so let's get into that. Why does it have to do with their stats in particular? Do they all share like a feat? What are these characteristics that power casters share?
So we were talking about this off mic, but the two attributes, because I put together a list like, okay, who do I think are the power casters? And it wound up being fairly conventional. Like, you see Haley 2, you see Denegra 1. Denny 2 obviously has dropped off because her feat is not as devastating as it once was. But you get Harbinger, you get Morvana 2 in there. And Kruger 2 and Krios 2 are also in there, kind of. I think what they have in common is that they still win a fair number of games, even against matchups that are designed to deal with them. Like, they overcome dedicated opposition very effectively.
Did you say Krios 2?
Krios 1.
Krios 1. Okay.
I got 2 on the brain because so many of them are epics.
Okay.
And then they also just cover a wide range of things. And what causes them to do that? There's two big ones. Is hard denial, like either partial activation denial, which Haley does and which Krios does to a certain extent.
This is through spells and or feats.
Yeah, so some kind of hard control also compounded by other very strong control abilities. So Kruger, Haley, Krios, Denny 1 to a certain extent have this. They debuff your speed, or they take away parts of your activation, and there's nothing you can do about it. And then on top of that, they hit you with either like telekinesis or more speed debuffs to heighten the intensity of the problem, or they just have really strong defensive denial. Like, you know, with Krios 1, if you feat for attrition, it's mostly heavies coming for you on the counterattack, and enliven off your vessels means the only things that heavies pay dividends attacking, they can't attack. So that's part of the power caster equation for me. The other camp of power casters, the guys who have this high success rate, is they bring really strong supporting packages in whatever way. They got a powerful feat, so like Lich 2, Harbinger, they got just something, Morvana 2. They have a really strong set of general tools, and then also they have overwhelming personal threat. So like Morvana in the late game will turn after turn fish out heavies. As long as she has some way to regain hit points, she will progressively kill heavies. A lot of casters straight up cannot move toward Harbinger, and Harbinger will often put the last hit on heavies or on substantial infantry portions, just blow it up. You know, Lich is no slouch in terms of personal threat either, especially with his feet. But if he has to, he'll mess you up. Casters that can close out games by themselves, like finish the peace trade still being ahead, like The last piece has fallen. I have my caster and something else. You have nothing. And my caster killed, you know, laid the final blow. So there's the hard denial, hard control casters. And then there's the strong all around package, strong feat, high personal threat casters. And it gives you a very repeatable set of, you can use these tools in a very repeatable fashion to win even hard opposition and to win a lot of different games. And I think that's what a power caster is. It's not like radically different from a normal strong competitive caster, but they just have everything. Like they have their cake and eat it too on the margins, and that just makes them more consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. The point that I have is that all of them, without exception, do two of the three win conditions for the game. I mean, there's really only two, assassination or scenario victories, but attrition, you know, often figures into that. So I consider it to be a third win condition.
Right.
They do two of those very, very, very well. The best can do all three, and they can just change their mind. I mean, people look at Legion as a faction, forget the caster, and they think Legion is extremely strong. And they are, because they can just their beasts can change the win condition. They can, oh, okay, I can't kill your caster, then I'm just going to kill your army. I'm going to snare you out with my amazing push animi. So stuff like that. So I think the true power casters, Haley, this was a great exercise. I think the game is in a great place right now because I was struggling. You know, I was like, well, there are casters that are more powerful than others, but I feel like the last super over the top Mark One Vlad II-esque caster was Denny II under Body and Soul before she got nerfed. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, you know,
yeah, and Denny II and Bradagus were,
yeah, and Bradagus before, yeah, you know, before the teleport nerf, and actually even Kruger II before, I mean, he got hurt big time by no double teleport also. Yeah. Because he already,
he could play both games. He could control and then assassinate you.
Yeah. Like if you stepped out of line for just a second, yeah, assassinate you, or don't, and just take out your heavies without retaliation. No. And right now I can only really think of, like, you know, Haley 2, Kruger 2, and Vale 2. And I think they have a lot of bad matchups.
Those are actually my same three plus, yeah. Lich 2.
Lich 2, he was in the conversation, yeah.
I still think he's that good. And
he is.
My criteria for power caster is pretty similar to what you guys are saying, but I think there's three things that they do. One is they get an extra turn. Somehow, some way, they get two turns during the course of the game where everyone else gets one.
Mm-hmm.
Vale 2 gets to just pop all of her spells for free.
I'd also put Vale 1 in the list because her hit and run feat is so strong.
She's very strong.
Yeah, I think that's definitely where the conversation lies. I would put Morvana too as not a power caster.
Really?
Just because there's the same thing. Neither. The power casters to me get like a full turn. Like Haley 2, I get to go twice. Like, enjoy. Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Vale 2 gets all of her stuff out twice, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I would argue that Morvana does it by making one of your turns not happen. Hmm. But
yeah.
Well, here's perhaps an interesting counterpoint. I was having a conversation with another one of our friends about Haley 2, Haley 3. You know, because my opinion of Haley 3 has gone up a lot more. She's fine. She has less what I would call bad matchups than Haley 2 does. You can drop her into almost anything. There's only like a few random casters that kind of screw over her by not allowing her to replenish focus, something like that. Who does that? Like Sevi 1. You know, yeah, like there are a couple things that like she really doesn't want to play into.
She also fights fair, though, is the problem.
She fights fair, yeah. So she... You can drop her into more matchups than Haley 2 at this point, but I don't consider Haley 3 to be a power caster. Haley 2 still gets up there for some reason. So maybe it is a higher win percentage against other very powerful casters across the board.
Yeah. So that was an extra turn. Winning without dice. A lot of these casters can move things around. So you literally win without rolling attacks.
Or high volume of being able to generate a good number of auto-hitting attacks is another hallmark. Like, that's Lich 2's, that's his bread and butter, and high volume of auto-hits.
It's the same thing. It's like, Lich 2 can put things into a charge lane with no dice. He doesn't have to clear a lane. Hmm. He doesn't have to figure things out. He can just charge over, drop down his guys, and...
Kill your caster, kill your colossal.
Kruger 2 can move things out of the zone just by saying he does it. There's no... Like, I compare it to Grim 2. Grim 2 is a good caster because he can do all these crazy things, but he has to hit first. Dinny 1 is a much better caster because she just goes, it happens.
Yes.
Like, that's the difference. And then, I think to your point, the third one is really being great at everything.
Right.
Like, power caster is a power caster because it's not just control. People call it a control caster.
Right.
That's just something that you have that everyone else doesn't. Lich 2 and Kruger 2 and Haley 2 or Vale 2 can still just straight up kill you pretty easily when things aren't going well.
Sure.
So I kind of equate it to poker. It's like, pair of jacks is good, but these are like pair of aces.
Right.
It's just, you can lose with a pair of aces.
Yeah.
But not as often as a pair of jacks. So they're just that step above.
Right. Yeah. I think like regardless of the meta, that the power casters, it doesn't matter. Like, if somebody brings something really weird, they still beat it. If they bring something really good that's tailored to beat them, they still beat it, you know.
They still can,
They still can. Yeah, I was thinking Butcher 3. I don't know what you guys think about him. He has, like, some very bad matchups, but I think he's interesting. I think he's a control caster, actually. He just has a 16-inch zone that...
Yeah, he controls by assassination.
Yeah, like, you can't move your caster here, and
Or by threat of overwhelming attrition advantage.
Right. And his only bad matchups are most of the time solo piece dependent. You know, he doesn't like anything that denies spells. And if you can do that, then great. If not, his personal efficacy is so great that there is nothing in the game that he cannot remove.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what you bring.
Two words, Drake spam.
Yeah, he doesn't like that much. That's true.
That's actually probably one of the reasons I will not wind up dropping Xerxes for a long time is that particular configuration, 6 Drakes, 3 Kreas, is really good against a lot of the power casters. Like against Lich 2, it's like a, I will probably win 7 games out of 10.
Yes.
Against Kruger 2, same kind of thing. Like, these are guys Scorn hates dealing with.
Right.
And that Xerxes configuration is like, it's decently generalist, but it's specifically because it's out there and it hits the power casters just hard enough. They're so strong that they still have a game, but like, if you don't have the entire list covered to the point where you can at least play, a win 4 out of 10 games against them type of scenario, any of the casters we've been talking about so far, if you don't have them covered, you will see them at a tournament and they will cause problems for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking of like, there are casters that are stronger in it's like broad and narrow. So I think what we're getting at here is that they have very wide application. So I was thinking of like Morgul 1 specifically in a center scenario. Like, you almost can't win against him in a lot of cases. Well, you might disagree with me, but I think he's absurdly strong. Another example of that might be, I don't know.
I really think for...
Absalonia 2.
Yeah, against certain things.
Against certain things.
Clean house.
She stomps them. Yeah, big time. Better than even Vale 1 does. But I think more people take the Vale 2, Vale 1. Like, I agree with that choice because it covers more matchups. Vale 1 can act as the armor cracker. Even though Absalonia 2 does it way better than Vale 1, Vale 1 also does, like, a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I would just, if these casters weren't as good as they are, people would have solved them by now. But
yes.
Haley 2 still wins all the time just because she is so broad and she can win on scenario. I mean, I kind of hate the word meta because what does that even mean? Unless you're making, Iron Gauntlet qualifiers, there's no such thing as meta. There's the game. Which by math, these casters are good.
Yes.
Your meta, find out what your eight bros are playing. Find out who's the best and learn how to beat that if you want to talk about meta.
Right.
But these casters are good because generally, if you're just going to play against anything.
Anything.
These will be the ones that give you the best chance to win because they have the most avenues to victory. It's not so much that they're better at any one thing than anyone else. It's they win in many different ways. People talk about the game stagnating and like how things would be so much better if Steamroller was changed or you could take four lists or I could take eight Tartaruses in a list.
But
even if we did all that, it would still be run by a Lich 2. Haley 2 would still be running whatever you did in any scenario. Like, it's just, unless there was a rules change, I think they would just still be played.
Right.
Because they give you that much of an advantage.
Well, this kind of leads into my next question is, I mean, we've talked about, there's some names that keep coming up, but like how powerful are these casters now? Has this changed since 2014, since 2012, you know, like, I thought this was very interesting. I mean, are these unassailable bastions of power that you, I mean, should you just always play these?
So I think they're strong enough that you should have a compelling reason not to play them. But over the last 3 years, I think the divide between the power casters and all of the other casters that are tournament viable, like Gareth is not going to be on this list of things we're considering, but like,
damn,
you know, other casters in the same factions as these really powerful casters, like Denegra 3, you know, 3 years ago, if she came out 3 years ago, she would never be considered. Because the other Denegras and Lich 2 were so much stronger than she is now. But I think the Erratas have actually been somewhat successful in that it's closing the gap.
Yes.
It wasn't a huge gap to begin with, but it's getting narrower. And I think that's leading to higher, that's going to wind up leading to higher diversity. Also, you know, the game of War Machine is not solved. There's still a lot of undiscovered territory in the game. And the more exploration that happens, I think it starts bringing the rest of the game up. Like I mentioned, I've been, you know, for a little over a year now, I've been playing Xerxes with a bunch of Basilisk Drakes. This is, you know, he's a newish model, but like, this is a big, in my eyes, a big discovery for Scorn. And
I credit you as being the inventor of that, by the way.
I credit myself.
Whether you take credit or not, I think you were the first one to do that for Irish Masters. So yeah, I was very impressed with that list, and I hate it. I wish you hadn't really found it, actually, to be honest. But
it's definitely interesting because Scorn plays in a completely different way with that, and I think you rack up wins just if someone hasn't seen it before. If someone doesn't know what they're getting into with Xerxes 2 and 6 Drakes, they're going to have a bad day.
It's
hard to stop.
That actually is a facet. I wouldn't say Xerxes 2 is a power caster because he's so vulnerable to control, and that Drake list, as strong as it is, hates control. This is actually something, like, going back to what makes power casters is they're repeatable. Even if you know what they do, their shticks are very hard to prevent. You know, to prevent, like, Xcarnate, you basically have to have no living models. And it's basically impossible to position against it because the range that Lich can drop that spell off is so far.
Yeah, and really they just... I was playing a lot of Body and Soul last year, and the reason Body and Soul was so ridiculous is you could make mistakes and be fine. Your opponent could make none or they lose. Like, it just was like, oh, you moved your caster within 17 inches of Denegra, you're done. Like, you don't know what Pursuit does? Oh, God help you. Like, you're just, it's over, like, before it even starts. And with Denegra too, since you have your extra turn, you could have stuff out of position. You could have Nightmare, like, on the edge of the board. You go, oh, shoot, I need him over there. Oh, I just feat now and run him, and it'll be fine on turn 3.
Right.
And I think that, like, the power casters do that, too. Yeah. Like, in a tournament, so War Machine now with 160 casters, I'm sure there's, you know, lesser played things that have a great game against Haley 2 or Veil 2. The problem is when you come into Fresh, you can't play every matchup every time. That's why I'm actually excited about Champions, because you could actually practice and know what people are doing. But in a completely open game, there's to some extent, there's going to be a point where you play something that you're not familiar with and they're playing you. Even if they know what Haley 2 does, they still have to deal with that. And you can just pick things off as you want unless they have a very good answer to whatever you happen to play.
Right. Right. The first time you do something, it's always awkward and fumbling for both players.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not really a true indication of if you repeat this, how does it go? Because games with immediate repetition often change pretty dramatically. And a first time fumble fest is not like that doesn't give you a good read on how the game should play out.
So focusing back on the question, so it's safe to say that you guys feel that, you know, despite these power casters being so strong and you need to have a compelling reason to not take them, they're not as powerful as they used to be.
Well, there's
due to nerfs.
I don't know.
What about model new model releases?
I think the power casters have been power casters almost since the start of Mark II. I don't think there's really been a new power caster except for maybe Morvana too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably by design. I think Privateer Press's design strategy, not to get into the designer's head, but it's always been to spread out. I mean, coming from Mark One, that's why they needed the revamp in the first place. They never tried to fix anything by nerfing. That's actually a very recent change, which is probably in the long run better.
Sure.
The plan was always just sell a new model that does crazier stuff.
Right. Yeah, keep up in the ante.
Yeah. But the problem was they never wanted to make it crazier than the top end that people were complaining about. I mean, I look back to something like Sorsha 1 before Line of Sight was a thing. She was the original power caster. And there was literally
not much you
could do about that.
Yeah, the old triple D would just get you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I didn't play during that time, but, you know, talking to our friend Ben, hearing some of those stories about, you know, which Vlad II assassinated the other one.
What Eris went first.
Which Eris went first. Yeah, and it seems very absurd.
I don't think it's nowhere near that level, but I would say since the start of Mark II, we have the same problems.
Yeah. So
I think it's getting better, though. I think the trajectory is really good.
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree with you, maybe not completely, but I thought it would be very easy to come up with power casters, and it's not. I don't think that there's any slam dunk stuff. Even in something like Signar, I don't think your Haley 2 is an auto include at this point. I think you might be able to do Haley, depending on what you want to do, in a two list format. You know, I think you might sub in Haley 3 for her. That's like the heart. That is the only one where I'm even borderline. No, you should always take Haley 2. But I mean, aside from that, I don't know. I mean, even Kruger 2 and Vale 2, there's just other stuff you can do now. There are other models and casters that have been released in a full functioning meta that really punish that kind of stuff. You know, they can punish them. They just don't. I see the power caster thing. I guess there are more casters that are equally viable. Maybe they're still power casters, but there are other casters that are, the pool is larger of casters that are on that level.
So the big one for me, like I say, you should probably take these guys unless you have a compelling reason. A compelling reason is having an incomplete pair, having a pair that doesn't achieve a very desirable effect or has gaping common holes.
Right.
And this is often a problem for Haley too, is there's not, up until arguably recently, there hasn't been a good partner for her. She can, you know, she'll cover a lot of stuff, but if you hit a situation where you really can't drop her, as rare it is, it can be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
I
don't know. I don't really agree. Haley too can play into, that's why they're so good, that she can, what is she not playing into? Trolls,
well, her
maybe.
Her high, Legion super matchup high armor got a little worse. She doesn't want to play in a Lilith 2 as much anymore. I have an example of her. I mean, I beat Haley 2 players all the time, but none of them are absurdly like the highest skill level. I'm not the highest skill level. Like, I'm pretty good, but I would say that Kador in the hands of a master cannot ever beat Haley 2 in the hands of a master. They don't have a single caster that can do it.
Yeah, I think that's important to note, is people talk about power casters in the meta, and that's why it bugs me, because all of this is predicated on the two players are playing correctly.
Right.
So unless you are in the Iron Gauntlet finals or you do are playing very, very good people who know their threat ranges and your threat ranges to a quarter of an inch. In the long run, it doesn't matter because there will be a mistake to punish these casters.
Right. But I am making a change because I play Kador a lot and Signar is the main boogeyman. I'd say it's probably the hardest matchup against, you know, equally skilled players. So I'm probably going to, you know, when the new Colossal comes out, I'm probably going to switch out my Butcher 3 for Irusk 1 because...
Just for Haley 2?
Yeah, for the Signar matchup. And Haley 2 is the biggest one, but because it dumps a big 5-inch AoE fire-causing stuff on all their annoying solos. And it doesn't matter which ones you catch. You just have to catch a few, and it becomes harder to win.
Yeah,
you catch very annoying. She hates being on fire.
Yeah.
Actually, that's one of her bad matchups is Fjord 2. Haley 2 does not like playing into that at all. She doesn't like to be on fire. Neither does Kane 2. So is Irusk 1 a power caster? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he didn't come up. Butcher 3, I think, is in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I would make that change because I think he's strong enough and he covers more matchups that...
Yeah, I would put it this way. If you're looking to win tournaments,
right,
especially outside of locally, one, you need to convince yourself while you're not playing
right
the handful of five casters we've said. If you really want to win,
sure,
I would start there. Like if you're looking to get your, you know, wall of first place coins.
Yes.
You know, play some Veil too. I bet you'll get a few.
Yeah.
And if you've decided you don't want to play those or you want to play something different, figure out how you're going to beat those. And I think that's why they're power casters. If you haven't spent a lot of time either playing those or figuring out how you're going to beat them, you're not going to win tournaments of more than, you know, 20, 30 people.
Right.
It's just how the game is right now.
Right.
And it will be unless the rules are changed.
Well, right. There's another thing at play, though, and this is like, you know, some serious self-reflection. Is you're going to a tournament, you are probably playing six or seven games, and those six or seven games could be all over the map. There's a high likelihood you'll hit a caster that we've been calling a power caster, but it's possible that you just have a weird day of like all trolls, or you get a bunch of cricks and you're just really well situated to deal with it. And you know, you can look yourself in the mirror before a tournament and say, if I see this today, I'm fucked. If I don't, I'm probably good.
Yeah. And other games I think about War Machine, I think a lot about poker and I think a lot about chess. And it's like, it comes back to my aces versus jack analogy. You could still go in with like a queen, king suited. That's going to win you a lot of matchups.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You're just hoping you don't see something better.
Right.
Like, and me personally, I never want to put myself in that position. So,
right.
I think it's better just to play something better.
Right.
Play the best thing. I mean,
yeah.
I would say, go back and look at Iron Gauntlet or War Machine lists or War Machine Weekend qualifier lists. I would say power casters are prevalent. Mm. And we can keep telling ourselves it's because it's just popular or the meta or the steamroller's dictating it, but it's probably math at this point.
Oh, like, it's absolutely math.
Yeah, like I after mean, right. 5 years of everyone playing these and like everyone coming to their own conclusion, I think if there was a crazy dark horse at this point, someone would have found it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I disagree with that. I think there is still a lot of dark horse territory, and I'll rarely say that new releases actually change the game that much. I don't think they do, but it keeps adding territory. You know, it's not all good. It doesn't all replace what had come before, but it does add territory. And like the, you know, my score and pairing, I feel very good about because there's some things it does really well into like Lich 2 or Butcher 3 that are traditionally problematic, but it just covers a very wide range of things. Like there's not a pairing I think I could hit that, you know, I wouldn't give myself worse odds than 5 out of 10 games if I make the right list selection. That can be because the power casters, it's not just playing in your faction. It's should I be playing these full stop? Like I've been playing Scorn for a few years. Should I just pack up shop and switch to like Scar 1 and Lich 2 or whatever? You know, if you're competing, everyone has to you have to ask yourself that.
Yeah.
And you do have to like knuckle down and do some serious introspection and some serious thinking. Like, is what I am doing compelling enough to say, no, I don't need to do that? Yeah, and I think it's possible to. I really genuinely do.
I definitely think I'm not trying to say that you to win tournaments you have to play these. I think it makes it much easier.
If you're, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about at the highest skill level or
any
like
skill level?
Your local game night or
I would say if your gaming group has 10 people in it and no one's playing Haley 2 and no one's playing Vale 2 or Kruger 2.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You should play one of those.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. Like, if you're not seeing that and you, like, go to a big con or something and say, oh, I don't get practice against that.
Right.
You probably should have been playing one of those.
Right. And don't let anyone put you down for that. So I guess that is, like, the last question we should close out with is, like, should you play these power casters?
Yeah.
And I think you should.
I think you should if you want to win. I think to Alex's point, too, is, especially with design space, because I was trying to think of new releases that just straight make power casters better. And I would say that's the one nice thing of playing a faction like Scorn or Trolls or Kador.
No power casters?
Yeah, you do get really cool stuff on new releases because they're trying to like branch out and give you like...
Sure.
Trolls are great to play right now. Every time a book comes out, you get crazy crap coming out that makes everyone better and you have 6 months of figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
If that's what you like to do... Man, go do it. But
yeah,
it's I don't think it's better than Vale 2 with her, you know, same old, same old. It's
right.
Just after you play for 3 years, that might get old.
Right.
Yeah. There's factions with some real compact packs of casters that.
Yeah. And there's something to be said. Like, I think the other reason people get so good with the power casters is you focus on the game and not your list. Like, with Body and Soul, I knew what my list was doing. And I knew how to stop it. And I just see people like trying to pass my Body and Soul test and they're not doing so well. I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. I'll take that. Thank you. And the same thing with Haley 2 or Kruger 2. Oh, you moved in for my feet, but a quarter inch too far. So now I'm killing all the stuff you love. And now we can play a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's... Bringing back up what I said about like fumble fest games, it's absolutely important to practice and repeat because the first several times you play with a list, maybe even the first dozen, it's super awkward. And once you get past that, you're no longer thinking about how not to trip over your own feet. You're actually thinking about how to play the game. And whether you're playing with power casters or not, that's a really important thing to do. As a subcategory of that, you do, like, should you be playing power casters? If no one in your area is, you definitely should be if you have any competitive ambition or if anyone locally does.
Yes.
You should give them reps with that. And you should, if no one else is doing it, you should be doing it.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame that I've heard people inflict. And maybe we have a very good meta, but I've had players come into ours and be like, oh, is it okay for me to play the casters that I really want to play, you know, I was like, absolutely. Like, I don't want to play your faction's crap casters. That's not going to help me. You know, I mean, I think we live maybe in this, you know, generation, whatever we are with, oh, everybody gets a trophy
it's
and everyone's
in
special and we don't want to make anyone feel bad or whatever. Play like you got a pair. Like, honestly, Bobby Fischer wasn't pulling no punches.
Yeah.
He was playing to win.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, you're doing me a disservice. I think it's disrespectful almost. Well, maybe that's going a little too far, you know, but
it's definitely,
I'm trying to get better.
Play.
Yeah. And if you're trying to pull a punch or go easy on me, either I'm in the wrong game or you're doing a disservice to me. And, play the good casters, play the fun ones. And it's fun to win. It's fun to do powerful stuff. It's fun to like, it's fun to do power stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's just as much as that. And it's helping everybody else or helping those players that don't. You know, I mean, if you're doing, you can have fun. I play like weird casters maybe a couple times a year. But you're helping people that maybe don't want to be in a competitive game like this find something, maybe a different game.
I've always been shocked that anyone plays War Machine not to play competitively.
Yeah,
like, I just, why?
Yeah.
There's so many funner games you could play if you're not trying to be competitive.
Right. Oh,
so, I think people are just being dishonest with themselves when they don't want to play stuff.
Go play Warhammer or something.
The game at a competitive level, I do not think is conducive to casual play. No, at all. Like you can play it for fun, like you know, you play it to blow off steam and you know escape from real life things, or just do something that you find enjoyable in your off time and not like you know try and become a pro. But it's actually structured like a board game where there's no like. Oh, ha ha ha, fun farting around. Like, you sat down at a game, you are trying to crush somebody. Like your objective and destination in play is no different from a serious board game.
It's a very unforgiving game with big swings and model count, so...
Oh, yeah, it's
and not in a 40K way where it's like, oh, I rolled some sixes, isn't that funny? No, it's like, someone did that with intent. So, for me, it's always... A casual game is just some, like an inexperienced game, and that's fine. Like if you wanna play for fun, or you're learning, or you don't want to take it as seriously, you can enjoy it to an extent. But there will always be people who understand the game more and play it better. So if you're not trying to do that, eventually as a casual player, you will have a bad time and quit the game. So it's just if you're a casual player, I fear that you're not long for the game of War Machine.
Yeah.
Just because someone with a competitive stint can't not play the game well. And that's kind of what you're expecting. And I think that goes to power casters too. Mm-hmm. And some people just hope that you're going to play something that's not as punishing or gives them a chance or doesn't take away their stuff so they have a chance to beat you. And that's definitely not the way to look at things.
Right. I'm trying not to lose a single model and table you.
After years of playing Scorn and then like some Crix and Mark One and other things, like casualties happen. So this is branching off into like totally different territory. But after a while in War Machine, you've got to break yourself to playing in like a different way sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to like break myself to I'm gonna suffer a shitload of casualties and still win.
Yeah,
and I have to be cool with taking those casualties.
Yeah, I gotta work on that.
Yeah, this is another thing that's not exactly casual friendly about War Machine is at the end of a game, like when a game comes all the way to fruition, almost everything is dead. Almost everything.
Yeah, between two really good players. Yeah. Yeah. It should be that way. It's trading.
It's just too similar to chess. Like,
it is.
I don't think anyone's played chess casually. Like, I guess you can, but chess isn't a relaxing game because there's a lose condition based on your movement, and War Machine's very similar.
Yes.
Like, if you move something in the wrong place, you will lose the game. So how can you play that casually? I guess you can do it without, like, you can play in a relaxed way and, you know, play without like fear of losing, I guess. But at some point, your actions are going to directly cause you to lose in some way. Or the other player was playing so much better than you, no matter what you did. I'm not sure what's better, but either way, neither of those are just we're playing for 2 hours and at the end we'll count up our points and see what happens. Like, it's just not the same thing.
No.
Well, I think it's a personality thing. Like, to do something cerebrally challenging for recreation is not for everybody. And to play in an unequal design environment, even if the divides are narrow, is not for everybody. And to, you know, to sometimes have to fight an uphill fight is not for everybody recreationally. That doesn't mean that, you know, some of the people who are really good at the game, you know, don't have this exact personality. Like, some people just like competing. You know, some people play like heavy Euro style games for relaxation.
Yeah, I think you find that at many final tables of tournaments. The final table is usually the most relaxed because those two people are on the same page.
Great observation.
Yeah. They're very competitive. They know the other person is going to also be competitive. We're playing with the same goal and we have fun. Any level lower than that, it gets weird.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not trying to win, someone's trying to win less than the other person, someone's going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. That's so true. Oh, man. Well, I think that's a wrap.
Yeah.
Probably
more than an episode.
We can,
we kind of
some of the rambling.
Sorry, casual players.
Yeah. we went on.
It is a very good topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com.
I know you guys have heard this story, but like somebody gave me an introductory game of War Machine a long time ago. Still when I was like super competitive 40K player, uh-huh. And it's like War Machine, and I ended up playing like the PG's girlfriend, and she was I couldn't even tell you, it was a minions caster, you guys will probably know, and his feat makes your army go incorporeal, they can like move through your models.
Oh,
who is that? Is that Maylock? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm like, oh, I've got iron flesh, and I just like from my math and dice, I'm just doing this. This is really good. I was playing Irusk, or maybe it was Sorcha 2 or somebody with iron flesh. I'm like, oh, I can't be.
That's the weirdest intro game ever.
I'm gonna beat the crap out of this. And she's a girl. I'm gonna beat the crap out of her. And then like, and I was, and then she just like feeded, and two gators moved through and like killed him. And I was very embarrassed and humbled. And yeah, I was like, oh, this is terrible.
Speaking of Maylock, my first LVO, I was playing Doomy Calandra, and I went up 5 of 6 of my rounds were against Fist of Halak. 5 of 6. And I'd never played Fist before.
Oh, boy.
So I just got like,
well, you were an
wrecked.
Old pro by
you're
the
good,
end.
Good by the end.
Yeah, and it was stupid. Like, my fifth Fist game, he was like, I took 2 Cannoneers. I was like, well, I still don't know what to do with the Satrati, so you still win.
Right.
But my last game was against Maylock, and this guy was, like, moving his stuff around. And I'm like, oh, well, I just purify all of your cool stuff that you put out. And he was like, oh, that's not good for me. So he like runs up and feats defensively. And he's like, incorporeal. And he runs up. I'm like, you can't attack me. And I'm like, Spirit Chaser. And I just kill like all of his gators.
He's
like, they're
everything.
Just gone.
Well, that's also a reading comprehension.
Yeah. he didn't look at the card.
Yeah. Read the card. Yeah.
But that's happened, you know. Yeah. I've been Moloch Karned, you know. I had to see it happen.
Well, that's different. That's different though from your mind like glossing over that this says until end of turn.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, right, because that's the
Okay. Oh, no, I think it was the opposite. Like, I had my stone out to counter his feet, and he went to incorporeal
right,
to, like, charge
and it
through.
Doesn't,
it
and
just it, gets stuck on some dudes like,
oh, you can see me.
Whoops.
My intro game I gave to my best friend down in Long Beach. He's a big 40K player.
Yeah.
He was so annoying. Actually, we played a lot of fantasy. He can judge distances by 1/4 inch from 72 inches away.
Wow,
so we would play he'd play orcs with catapults.
It's that battle cannon.
Yeah, and he would just be like, 36 and, well, technically I can't go to halves, but it's 36 3/4, but I'll say 36 1/2. And it would be like right in the middle. And I'm just like, okay, well, I lose. So I give him an intro, and I used to play a lot of Kane 1, and he was borrowing someone's Menoth army. So it was like that. So it was like Temple Flame Guard, Zealots,
sure,
just all the infantry in the world. So I start shooting like 4 or 5 things every turn, and he's just running up like orcs, like, I don't care, I'm gonna kill you. And then I've already killed like 2 units. He's like, this is stupid, I don't even want to play this game anymore. I'm like, well, that's a good thing, because I was about to do this, and I just move Kane up and start like killing his whole army,
make him cry.
I'm like, that's War Machine.
Yeah.
And 4 months later we started playing. Like, he didn't play for another 4 months.
Yeah, I didn't play after yeah, that girl like beat the shit out of me with a minion. And then I was even more embarrassing when I found out, you know.
Oh, these guys are
minions
at the bottom of the heap.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's not even a real fact, you
Oops.
Know. which I think they are now with some of the recent releases, but yeah.
Oh, man, that's another one for the overrated, underrated. Crow Craters, hella overrated.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know. I really like Larson's Grim 1 list. Seems super fun.
I haven't seen that.
It's Grim 1, Impaler, Glacier King.
Two units of
Crow Craters.
Okay.
Creel Stone, probably Min Creel Stone, and Dunia Knot.
I think you should take out 1 unit of Crow Craters for 2 units of
Fire Eaters.
Fire Eaters.
Yeah.
It was 1 change, but I don't know. I haven't had a problem with Croak Raiders thus far.
Croak Raiders. The thing that disappoints me most about Croak Raiders is, like, how confident are you in your ability to roll sixes? If you can roll a lot of sixes, Croak Raiders are probably a really good unit. If you don't trust that that's going to happen, though, or you get bit by it a couple of times, like, today I roll fives.
I'm better at eights. Better at eights than sixes. I think it's because I try harder. Like, I, like, really shake the dice before I roll.
Oh, my God. Is this some of that power of positivity?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I read The Secret again last night. I'm totally rolling eights.
That's right. Yeah, my favorite is the dude in The Big Lebowski where he listens to recordings of strikes. I'm like, I need to, like, make some recordings of rolling like a handful of fives and sixes and just listen to it in my sleep.
Maybe I should just record someone sobbing. Like, that's what I want to hear.
Hear,
like,
the crying, wailing. That's great.
You can do what?
Yeah. What does your feet do?
Pick up your models. Pick them up. Yeah, like,
that's gone now.
They're
dead.
What
did you roll? It doesn't matter.
They can sit over there. Okay, you can have them on the board, but back in that deployment zone corner, because they are dead. So, yeah.